screaming now. They brought death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the title of today's show is Jobs Down, Stimulus Stalled, and Bubbles Up. In other words, things are getting worse, or at least not getting much better. Depends on your perspective. And we'll talk about some of those perspectives where people see things getting better. Okay, let's talk about the jobs report that just came out today. Not very promising. And this is the Labor Department, Bureau of Labor Statistics report, which really lowballs the problem because of the way they calculate some of the statistics. Yeah, they underestimate. But even that underestimation can't hide what's going on. Okay, some facts about the jobs report today. The headline is, only 49,000 jobs created in January. You know, we lost 140,000 in December. First time they actually lost jobs again since last March. Well, those job losses in December got revised further downward. It wasn't 140,000 jobs lost. It was 227,000 jobs lost in December. And you can expect this 49,000 job gain in January to get revised down as well. Besides, looking within that 49,000, what do you see? You see only 6,000 private sector jobs created. Six, that's nothing. That means the private sector has totally stalled out at best. All the job gains, essentially, were in education, K through 12. In other words, teachers going back to work. As more and more parents began to complain seriously about shutting down the schools. You know, in other countries, they haven't shut down the school like Germany and so forth. No, because they know that the infection rate is almost nil in schools if you follow, you know, basic wearing masks and distancing and so forth. But we got teachers who are fearful of going back to school, thinking the kids are going to give it to them. Some of them are even saying they won't go back to school even after vaccinations. Well, this is untenable. This is untenable. This isn't going to work. And if the politicians don't get these kids back in school, they're going to get recalled like Newsom in California. So now the tide is shifting to get the kids back in school. And teachers' unions better get on board here, or they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. Anyway, that's a digression. That's a digression. Let's get back to the statistics at hand here from the Labor Department jobs report today. It's not 49,000. It's only 6,000, and that will be revised downward. You watch in next month's report. So we're still losing jobs. Jobs aren't being created. You know, it takes about 125,000 new jobs created every month just to absorb the new entrants into the labor force. You know, people grow up, they turn 18, and they look for a job. That's the 120,000 a month. If you're not growing jobs by at least 120,000 a month, you're growing the number of people who are unemployed, as people hit the labor force and they can't find a job. 49,000 is not even half. And again, it's not really new jobs created. This is teachers going back to work. This isn't new job creation. If you look at the rest of the economy in January, Even manufacturing construction lost jobs. Yeah, I mean, they've been touting those two sectors, manufacturing. Oh, it's growing. We're increasing output. Oh, construction is growing. New homes, housing is booming, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay. But the jobs aren't growing. Yeah. They're producing more, but the jobs aren't growing the way the output is growing in manufacturing or construction. Businesses are figuring out ways of doing more with fewer workers. You see, that's one of the long-term consequences, structural changes in this economy that's happening. Even if everything were perfect and everything turned back to where it was, the old normal, you would see fewer jobs. Because it's not just COVID-driven. The economy has been mortally wounded, and businesses adjust, and they figure out ways of, you know, doing more with less. That's one of the negative consequences of protracted joblessness. So even manufacturing, construction lost jobs. Manufacturing lost, what are the numbers here? 10,000 jobs in January. Construction, 3,000. Okay. Local education increased by 85,000. Professional tech jobs are growing, of course, because those folks are working from home. Those are the people working from home, doing great, by the way. But it's the rest in service jobs especially, but also manufacturing structurally and construction structurally, who aren't doing so well. It's a bifurcated job market, tremendous, just as the country is economically bifurcated. The wealthy 5% are doing fantastic, and the rest are either running in place or falling backwards. All right, some more statistics here, besides those I indicated, all right? Long-term unemployment, in other words, those who are jobless for more than 26 weeks, is at record levels. 40% of the total unemployed have been unemployed for more than 26 weeks, more than half a year. That compares to other recessions in the past, normal recessions, in which the long-term unemployed made up about 20% of the total unemployed. Not 40. Long-term unemployment, twice as bad as in normal recessions. And again, that's not just COVID-related, but that's increasingly the structural change going on in the labor markets that'll be with us for a long time. What else can we say? Retail, now losing jobs again after Christmas. Healthcare jobs actually declined, 29,000 healthcare. Can you believe it? We need healthcare workers so badly. And we had 29,000 more lose their jobs. You know how many healthcare workers lost their jobs over the past year? 300,000 of them. What the hell is going on? We should have a war economy where we're rapidly training these people that we need. And we're going to need for a long time because, you know, this thing is not going away overnight. No, we're fighting these new variants all the time. And it looks like in the last two decades, the 21st century is a century where every 5 to 10 years, we have a major epidemic, pandemic. That's going to continue. We need to train and provide millions of new healthcare jobs. But you're not going to do it if you rely just on the private sector. The government has to step in with a massive retraining, job retraining program for people focused on the needs that are greatest, which are in healthcare and green energy. Now we talk about a green jobs, a green new deal. Okay, we need a health new deal just as much as a green new deal. But no one's even thinking of that. Warehousing jobs. Amazon down 28,000. What the hell is happening? 28,000. Conversely, we see temporary jobs up 80,000. What does that mean? That means that business is hiring people back. To the extent they are hiring people back as the economy opens, they're hiring them as temps, which means they can get rid of them just as quickly, and they don't have to pay them prevailing wages or benefits. They pay them lower wages. Again, this is how business manipulates the crisis. Yeah, they hire back, but they hire back as temps or part-time. That means less income when they do return to work. Okay, so temp jobs up since October. 300,000 increase in temporary jobs. Warehousing down, healthcare down, retail down, manufacturing construction down, long-term unemployment up. That's a disastrous jobs report, folks. Disaster. And yet we come out with this number of the unemployment rate going down from 6.7% in December to 6.3%. Unemployment's going down? With all these new job losses in January? And by the way, if you look at January, we've had record new unemployment claim filings. In other words, first-time unemployment throughout the month of January. You know how many? An average of 1.2 million a week, every week, during the month of January. So that's like 5 million more people applied for unemployment benefits. 5 million more. Oh, but, you know, the number of unemployed is going down. Oh, we have, barely 10 million people jobless. No. We have 25 million people jobless, almost 20 million collecting unemployment benefits. How the hell do you reconcile almost 20 million getting unemployment benefits and say at the same time only 10 million are jobless? Well, you got to be jobless to get benefits. The number of jobless just looking at the unemployed getting benefits is twice that they're reporting. Well, why is that? Well, that's because they cherry pick. The media and the politicians, they cherry pick the lowest fraction of unemployed. They only look at the full-time workers who lose the job. That's called the U-3 unemployment rate. That's the one that they keep saying 6.7, 6.3. We have 50 million people in this country who are part-time, who are temp part-time, you know, who are gig workers, freelance workers, whatever. And then you hear the unemployment benefit claims numbers I was talking about. Oh, it's only 770,000 a week only. They only report the state unemployment benefit system. They don't report the supplemental federal unemployment system, you know, for freelancers, gig workers, and so forth, which is averaging last month about 400,000 a month. So 800,000 plus a month average for the state unemployment benefits. Add another 400,000 to that, you get 1.2 million every week new filings. 5 million in 1 month filing for benefits. And that's not counting people who have lost their job, who have given up and aren't filing for benefits, or for people who have exhausted their benefits and falling off the wagon. It doesn't count people who are staying at home watching their kids because the schools aren't open. Doesn't count those. And then there's this error in the Labor Department statistics, which, by the way, the Labor Department admits is an error but hasn't done anything about it, in which when they survey people for unemployment, right, there's a category, employed but absent from work. Are you one of the people employed still with your company but absent? In other words, you're a person on furlough. Yeah, they don't count those people as unemployed. In fact, they count them as employed. Employed. In other words, I'm not working. I'm not getting anything, but I think I'm still part of my company. They'll call me back sometime. Well, the Labor Department says you got a job. You got no pay, but you got a job. You see, all the oxymoronic ways in which the U.S. government plays games with all these statistics. And, you know, a lot of the statistics are not phony. It's not that they cook them all up, but they create so many of them. And it allows the politicians and the media to cherry pick the best one to make it look like it's not as bad as it really is. That's that U-3 unemployment. You know, only full-time workers, right? And the number goes down simply because more people have dropped out of the labor force. I'm not going to go into the arcane way they calculate the unemployment rate. But I've been teaching labor economics for a long time, and that's one of the first things that I explained to students. I said, you know, the unemployment rate, the U3, is phony. It's a cherry-picked, best-case number. Doesn't reflect the true unemployed. You know, most economists, they don't even bother with the U3 unemployment rate. They look at, if you want to know how many people are jobless, you know, you can start with looking at the number of people who are on benefits, who filed claims. And that's almost 20 million people getting benefits on claims. And you got to add to that those who've dropped out of the labor force. They're not going to get benefits, and they're jobless. And that's millions, about 3 to 4 million. And you got to add to that those folks who are misclassified as employed but absent from work. And then there's other problems with those rates as well. You know, I won't get into like new business formations, phony 9-month lag data. You know, there's so much there that if you don't know what's behind the screen, you never see the Wizard of Oz pulling the levers. So that's the truth of the jobs report, right? Very bad report. And of course, it was an opportunity. The unemployment rate is really over 15%, by the way, just to throw the last figure there. Not 6.3%, easily over 15, which is great recession levels, by the way. Not a normal recession. You know, years ago, you know, after the Great Recession in 2008-09, I wrote a book criticizing Obama's program, his recovery program, that was insufficient in terms of total stimulus that took 6 years to get the jobs back, 6 years, just to get back to the level of jobs we had before the recession set in 2008. 6 years. And by the way, the jobs that we got back were lower paid. Again, business, you know, and they find ways of using more temps, using more part-time, not paying benefits, etc. You know, they take advantage of the crisis. And workers don't get back to where they were, even if businesses do. Okay. So this unemployment report, or jobs report, actually, whatever you want to call it, was used by Biden today to come out and give another push to his $1.9 trillion stimulus program called the American Rescue Plan, ARP. I'll just call it ARP from now on. Okay. We had a show on that a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I would suggest folks just go back and listen to that show here. It's the podcast is archived here on PRN. Take a look at it. Listen to it. It's been almost 4 weeks since he's announced that $1.8 trillion, and it's still dragging its butt through Congress. course, a lot of that is because of Republican opposition. But some of it is because the Democrats have been trying, at least the corporate wing of the Democrats, have been trying to get bipartisan support from the Republicans. Come on. You're not going to get any support from the Republicans. Did you learn the lesson of 2009? You know, a crisis that economically was like four times less than the one we have today. The Republicans wouldn't give you any support. You know, that was Obama's big error. He thought, well, let's get support here, bipartisan, you know, and they tried and tried, and they came up with a really weak program. His stimulus bill, only $787 billion. I've talked about that here before, you know. Read the book, you know, Obama's Economy, Recovery for the Few. It's all documented. Heavily data and statistics reporting there of what actually happened. Well, you know, Biden was the guy that Obama had given responsibility to push that through Congress. He couldn't get bipartisan support then, and of course the Republican Party is even more radical right today. You think he's going to get it today? No way. And what's going on in Congress is this big fight within the Democratic Party. You know, you see all the fights in the Republican Party, you know, Cheney versus Green and all that nonsense going on, right? Look, Republican Party's got to split at some point. It's inevitable. I've talked about that in a previous show, you know, political legacies of Trump. But the Democratic Party, there's a catfight going on inside, too. You know, the Bernie Sanders, the Warrens, and others, progressive caucus there, trying to go big on this because they knew it was a total flop and that there will be a repeat of what happened under Obama. In other words, he had 2 years with a much more solid majority in both houses to do something. He went light, and then he got whacked. Then the Dems got whacked in the 2010 midterm elections. Well, 2022, they will get whacked again and lose both houses, and then the game will really be over if they don't do something big. And Sanders knows this, and he's trying, and the progressive caucus is trying to desperately push this through the Democratic Party to go big. And probably Biden realizes it himself. I mean, you got to be blind not to see what happened in 2009, 10, 11. It was so obvious. You know, it took 6 years just to get the job level back and then at lower pay, as I said. Oh, but you know, the bankers and investors did wonderfully under Obama, first term and second term. Yeah, they recovered within a year fully and went on to make big record profits and even more record distribution of stock buybacks and dividend payouts. Almost $1 trillion a year was redistributed by corporations to their investors, i.e. the top 5%, especially 1%, especially 0.1%. That's the investor class. And they made money hand over fist while workers struggled to get their jobs back over 6 years at lower pay. Well, that was the legacy of Obama and going light in the recovery. You know, Biden sounds like he learned that lesson, and they better know if they don't do something quick this year. If this economy is not turned around by the end of the year, they are toast in 2022. So Biden appears to be pushing for $1.9 trillion, but you know, the key of whether he gets it or not is whether the Democrats are going to be successful in pushing what's called the budget reconciliation process. That's a system where all they need is 50 plus one votes. And the one vote, of course, would be the vice president, you know, chairing the Senate there. A budget reconciliation approach could get to $1.9 trillion. But will all the Democrats stay on board? I don't think so. watch this Republican multimillionaire in Democratic cloth called Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia. He's the key here, you know. And then he's got his little puppy following him, the senator, Sinema, I think her name is, from Arizona. So those two are signaling they're not going to agree to a budget reconciliation. That means they can't, Democrats can't get to 50 plus one. That means the $1.9 trillion flops. Now, maybe Manchin is just trying to negotiate with his own party here in order to get some freebies for himself in West Virginia. We don't know, but we will see. But see, these are the blue dog Democrats, they call them blue dogs, right? This is a faction in the Democratic Party, which is always Republican in spirit, you know, and Democrat in name. They run a Democratic ticket to maximize, you know, their business vote and fool people that they're a Democrat and get some more votes. You know, that's always been a strategy of blue dogs. I don't think they're going to get it. I think Manchin, you know, I mean, he must be getting tremendous pressure from big businesses and investors and so forth, right? To break ranks. Well, if they break ranks, then they got to get 60 votes in the Senate. That means they got to get McConnell to go along with it. And they'll never get McConnell to go along with it. Because Republicans in the Senate smell blood on the floor in 2022. And they're going to do everything, as they did under Obama, you know, to scuttle anything really necessary. But, you know, today it's even more necessary than it was in 2009, even more so today, to actually do something significant to get people spending. Well, you know, I listened to Biden this morning, came online here in Bloomberg and gave his push for his $1.9 trillion. Didn't say anything about reconciliation, by the way, right? But he did cite some interesting statistics or reports here. You know, he said if we don't go big on the $1.9 trillion now, according to different independent estimates here by outside organizations like the Congressional Budget Office, well, not really outside, is it? We won't recover the jobs until 2025, 5 years from now. I think that's optimistic. Actually, probably like more like 2027. If there's not another crisis and recession in between, by the way. But if we go big and go $1.9 trillion, he says, and he cites Moody's Analytics and Brookings Institute, that we will recover all the jobs by the end of 2021. I don't agree with that either. But certainly it'll be better. You know, they're really counting on getting everybody mass vaccinated here by this summer, and the economy totally opening up this summer. Well, that's what they counted on last summer. The economy would totally open up during the summer, and it did not. Only about two-thirds opened up. You know, you look at the GDP numbers last year. From February to June, the economy collapsed 10.5%. Massive contraction, unprecedented. Then they opened up the economy prematurely, it's obvious, but they opened it up and the economy recovered back 7.5%, roughly 7.4, you know, which is just under 70% recovery by opening up. But what happened in the fourth quarter? It relapsed again. The economy relapsed. And what was the growth in the fourth quarter? Well, the numbers just came out, preliminary GDP numbers recently. 1% growth rate quarter to quarter from 7.4% in the third quarter, July, September. It fell back to only 1% in October, December. So picture this, 10.5% collapse in the first half, third quarter, recover 7.4%, fourth quarter, whoa, that slows down to only 1%. Now that scenario perfectly fits what I've been talking about since March of a great recession trajectory of the real economy. A great recession is a collapse of the economy due to a shock of some kind. Could be a financial crash, as in 2008-09. In this case, it was a COVID crash. Great recessions, after the big initial contraction, have a partial recovery. That was the third quarter. But then they relapse. In other words, the recovery slows down and may even go negative once again. Well, we had a slowdown fourth quarter. If they don't get this stimulus passed significantly, fairly quickly, and significant amount, there will definitely be a contraction in the first quarter 2021, January, March. A lot will depend, too, on the COVID distribution. Can they get the vaccines out? They're having a hell of a time, aren't they? Because there's no war production plan. There's no war plan here. Never has been. There's been no plan whatsoever in the last 6 months under Trump. That guy went off and all he cared about was manipulating public opinion and getting reelected at whatever the cost. There was no government except, you know, bureaucracy marking time in this country for months. Now they're trying to put the government pieces back together. And we see the problems they're having with distribution. And if you can't get the COVID thing under control, well, then you can't get the rest of the economy going either. They know that. So Biden is trying desperately, you know, to get the funding to get the economy going once again and to get the government going once again. And he says himself, he admitted today, Biden admitted that in 2009 they flubbed the job. There wasn't enough. And as I said in my book, Obama's Economy Recovery for the Few, published in 2012, it wasn't just the magnitude of the stimulus in 2009 that was insufficient. It was the composition. And there was $300 billion of that $787 billion went to tax cuts, most of it to business, which got hoarded. You see, you push tax cuts in a crisis and business sits on it. Why should they use the tax cuts to expand production when people don't have the income to buy anything? They're not dumb. So they sit on the tax cuts. They take them, but it doesn't end up in real investment in expanding production. It goes nowhere. And of course, that's what's happened with the $650 billion in tax cuts passed last March under the CARES Act. It's produced nothing, virtually, in terms of new investment and stimulus. Look, the figures, you can see it in the collapse of productivity in this country last year, almost 5%. Unprecedented collapse in productivity. What's productivity? Well, that's where, given the amount of workers with the amount of equipment, capital machinery, are able to produce more. Well, if you're not increasing the machinery investment, in other words, in plant equipment, you're not going to get productivity. In fact, if you're taking offline, you're going to get a contracting productivity number, which is what we got, meaning there was no real investment going on last year. And that's because we never really had a stimulus bill. We had a mitigation bill. Mitigation means you're going to buy a couple months. You know, mitigate the worst so that you can buy some time in order to really stimulate the economy. Well, we never got a stimulus bill. We got a mitigation bill. We only spent $1.2 trillion that got into the economy last March for the whole year. You know, then they had to put a supplement of $900 billion on that in December, right, because it wasn't working. They knew the economy was flat in the fourth quarter, only 1%. Maybe it's even worse when they revise it. We'll see. I knew it. So they threw another mitigation at it in December. You know, $300 checks, for another couple months, unemployment supplement for another couple months, $600 checks, which some got, a little bit more money for small businesses. You know, that was the finger in the dike stimulus of December. But that runs out in March. It was another mitigation bill. And now they really have to pass a real stimulus. Or if they get another lowball mitigation bill like the Republicans are proposing, $600 billion only, well, that'll buy you a month or two, maybe more. And then you're right back where you were. Well, you know, that's where Mitch McConnell and the Republicans want to put the Democrats, right back where they were, you know. So there's no real recovery throughout this year. So next year, they kick them out of the Senate and the House. Yeah, that's the whole McConnell plan. In other words, play hardball politics no matter what happens to the country and millions of people, no matter how many people go hungry, how many people lose their jobs, you know, play hardball politics. All that matters is getting back in power. If Biden and Democrats don't go big, that's exactly what's going to happen. And as I said before, you know, it's all in Joe Manchin's hands, really. You know, Democrats are so concerned about taking committee assignments away from Green there in the House, you know. Their bigger worry is the Blue Dogs in their own House. And in the Senate, of course. How are they going to make sure that the Blue Dogs act like Democrats and not Republicans? Well, again, we'll see that. Larry Summers played a big role in January 2009. He was the advisor to Biden and Obama, who said in 2009, oh, we're spending too much. $787 billion. You know, stimulus bill in January 2009 was too much. We couldn't spend that much, even though 300,000 of it was tax cuts for investors. Oh, that was too much. It would end up in inflation. We couldn't find places to spend it. Well, here comes Larry Summers again. Yeah, he's got a new editorial in the Washington Post. And he interviewed again today on Bloomberg News, pushing his same old bullshit line, right? Oh, we got to go slow. We can't afford to spend that much. He calls the $1.9 trillion a blank check, right? Six times larger than what was spent in 2008. No, not really. Because GDP is larger today than it was in 2008. It's about the same, a little bit more maybe, than what Obama spent in 2009, and that was insufficient. In other words, even the $1.9 trillion is insufficient. I've been saying since last March, we got to spend immediately $4 trillion. That was then. It's worse now. Immediately, if you really want to get a stimulus to turn the economy around. Oh, but Larry says, oh, you know, it's six times worse relative to the GDP gap. You know, that's a bullshit concept in economics, the GDP gap. In other words, the gap is what you're producing today in GDP, or you could produce it if you were at full employment. Well, no one knows what the hell full employment is. You know, full employment in 1942 was 1.9%. You know, it's a fictitious stake in the ground, what is full employment. Anyway, the GDP cap is the difference between actual GDP and potential GDP. That's called the gap. And, you know, being a phony number, he then uses the phony number to say, oh, 1.9 trillion is so excessive, it's six times bigger. No, it's not. Just look at the size of the GDP today compared with 2008 and compare the fact that 800 billion and 1.9 trillion today, it's about the same. The hell with this GDP gap nonsense. But that, those are the games, you know, economists play. He's not even an economist. He's an uneconomist. Yeah, people like Larry Summers are uneconomists. He's worried that, we need a contingency plan here. 1.9 trillion is going to go into household savings. No, it's not. That's another misrepresentation that it's all going to go somehow into your bank account. You know, everybody's going to have 1.9 trillion more in their bank account, and they're going to spend it all and drive up consumer demand, and the economy will be on fire. That's his phrase. Oh, we'll set the economy on fire. And then he cleverly adds, look, we have to engage in another round of long-term investments here, and that's going to be even more spending. That's called the Build Back Better, fancy phrase for infrastructure spending. Oh, that's going to have to happen here this summer. And if we spend 15% of GDP right now, which of course it isn't, if we do that right now, and that's another misrepresentation, as if all, you know, all 1.9 trillion is immediately going to get thrown into the economy. A lot of that is tax cuts. A lot of that's going to sit on state and local government ledgers for a while. Well, if we do that, then we won't have enough for infrastructure spending later. It will make the deficit so massive that, and here's another twist, we'll have to raise taxes on the rich. Oh, heaven forbid. You know, that's really what he's concerned about. That's really what he's reflecting for his capitalist buddies here and banker buddies. Oh, they don't want those tax cuts raised, because if you spend $1.9 trillion now and then you have to spend more on infrastructure, well, then there's no other way except raising taxes on the rich. So what? We gave them $5 trillion. In the last 2 years, investors, the investor class, big corporations. We gave them $5 trillion in tax cuts. Oh, they're still peddling this thing at $1.5 trillion, which is just bullshit. Because even the $1.5 trillion that was thrown out as the cherry-picked number minimizing the tax cuts for the rich under Trump in 2018, you know, that assumed that there would be no recession for 10 years and GDP growth would be 3-4% growth every year, which never, ever happens. And of course, that was all before the big crash here, right? So not 1.5 trillion or even 1.9 trillion after they added another 429 billion in tax loopholes for businesses in 2019. It's not 1.5 or 1.9 trillion. No, it's $5 trillion, because they also underestimated purposely the big tax cuts for multinational U.S. corporations offshore. You see, they didn't calculate that into it. It's really a $5 trillion tax cut. So, oh, heaven forbid, we can't raise taxes on those folks anymore to pay for infrastructure and to pay for this emergency stimulus. That's where Larry's going. He's trying to protect his rich buddies. And they come up with all these clever economic, you know, leisure domain, conceptual leisure domain, you know, GDP gap, you know, all this nonsense to fool you. They're not economists. They're uneconomists. Uneconomists, not economists. Uneconomists. They're there, they're ideologists. They're there to spin the conceptual framework of economics in order to protect the interests of their rich buddies. That's what that's all about. Okay, so what we got here with the ARP, American Rescue Plan, is we're right back where we were, you know? And Biden says, he reiterates, you know, we need $160 billion for COVID. $160 billion. What is that? Well, that's $20 billion for the vaccination programs to create centers and mobile units and Medicaid and immigrants, right? $50 billion for testing, for labs and test kits that are necessary if schools are going to open up everywhere. Free tests, nursing homes, prisons, hiring 50,000 healthcare workers. That's part of that $160 billion. More disaster relief to provide more PPE. Now they're talking about, finally, why can't we just give everybody, you know, a half dozen N95 masks? Well, we should have been mass producing N95 masks last April. If we had a war economy, we would have done that. We would have seized the factory somewhere, the government, and they would have forced the production of N95 masks, because those are the only masks that really work, you see. That's what the politicians wear, right? That's what doctors wear. We run around with these little flimsy blue things, right, with holes everywhere. $160 billion is also, you know, for international assistance here. Disaster relief, pandemic supplies, therapies. Well, that all of that's absolutely needed. Well, you know what the Republicans are proposing for that? $20 billion. Yeah. We need $130 billion for reopening the schools. That's into $1.9 trillion. You know, you got to reduce class sizes. You got to get more space. You got to fix the ventilation. You got to get more janitors. You got to get more PPE. You got to have a nurse. You got to have improvements in the buses, right? For those who are commuting, you got to have tutoring, right? School reimbursements. $35 billion for higher education, you know, public and minority colleges. Yeah, you need $130 billion for that, too. I don't know what the Republicans are saying, but I bet you it's not $130 billion. And then there's $70 billion in the Biden $1.9 trillion for emergency paid leave through September. You see, in the CARES Act last March, corporations with more than 500 workers were exempted from providing emergency sick leave. They were exempted. So were companies with less than 50. Well, you know, the Biden plan said, let's end that. Everybody, you know, emergency paid leave. And there are maximums, you know, imposed on that, and especially for federal workers and state and local government workers, right? Well, what else is there in that proposal? By the way, I wrote an article on this, you know, Biden's stimulus plan. Go check it out in detail on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Now, what he did say today, too, Biden, was that he's sticking firm to the $1,400 checks, you know, $600 supposedly already paid. But talking, I've been talking to a lot of people, and most of them haven't gotten to $600. So $1,400 checked, but now he signaled, Biden signaled something today that, watch it closely, targeted $1,400 checks. This is what the Republicans want. You know, they're saying, you know, giving it to people making $75,000 a year is not necessary. You got to keep it to people under $50,000 a year annual income. In other words, they're going to cut out most of the middle class. And maybe Biden's going to go along with that. Targeted. Only those 50,000 annual income below will get the $1,400 checks. Watch that close. Right? Unemployment benefits. Biden wants them to continue through September. Republicans want it to end in middle of March. Or maybe extended a couple more months. We'll see. Biden wants $400 supplement. Republicans want $300. Rent assistance. Moratorium. You know, why don't they just, for people living, you know, in non-hedge fund, massive apartment buildings, why don't they just pay that back rent for people? Just pay it. You know, what's it going to cost? $70 billion for all the back rent? You mean they can't come up with that? After they give $650 billion last March to businesses that just hoarded it? Food assistance, child care, all that is absolutely necessary. Tax credits for middle-class families with child care. All these things are in the Biden bill. They're all good. You know, I support all of that. You'll see a big fight over, though, is the last part of the Biden ARP, which provided $440 billion for state and local governments and local transport, tribal governments, and so forth. The Republicans will try to sever that from the bill. They might get that. You know, it's a compromise. So, and minimum wage, you know, they won't get that in the bill either, minimum wage. Okay, so, you know, that's the picture with the stalled stimulus. It's been 4 weeks now since announced, you know, and all we got was a, you know, symbolic vote on budget reconciliation. We'll see what happens. But if they can't get Manchin to go along, game over. We'll have a repeat of 2009 Obama insufficient. And we'll have a repeat then of 2010 midterm elections come 2022. What about bubbles? You know, we've been talking about financial asset bubbles. You know, the stock markets are so divorced from reality. It's like two different worlds, right? The bubbles keep going up and up. Why? Because investors are so fat with cash. Because most of the stimulus has gone to them, you see. They're so fat with cash, they're just buying everything. And we got speculators coming to the fore. You know, that's what this GameStop was all about. One group of retail, they call them retail speculators. These are guys who are only making, you know, hundreds of thousands a year, upper middle class, whatever, who are speculating on stocks versus the big hedge fund institutionals who speculate on stocks. The only difference was the hedge funds were speculating on GameStop and AMC and others falling, the price of their stock falling, whereas the retail guys, you know, day traders on Reddit and Robinhood were betting on a rise, contrary. So you got these two groups of speculators in a food fight, a financial food fight. Huh. Do I give a damn about any of either of them? No. Plague on both their houses. Because all this speculation means all this money that could go into rescuing the economy or could go into real investment, give real jobs to real people and income, you know, is diverted into financial markets, stock markets. And now they're betting on the dollar and currencies, you know, volatility. They love volatility. You know, speculation means I'm betting on the rise of a financial asset, a stock or currency or derivative. I'm betting that it will move either up or down. I can make money if it falls, right? And that in the short run, that change in the price of that financial asset, I will flip and make a capital gain. You see, I'm just jumping in markets, driving it up or driving it down, cashing in, taking my profits, going to the next financial asset market. You know, is interesting. Read my article there on GameStop, the game that never stops, on my blog, jackrasmus.com, or on Counterpunch or ZNet or wherever. You know, where I talked about this game, speculation game going on. And it's driving up bubbles in stocks everywhere. You know, now we're beginning to see some analysts saying, oh, you know, they expect a 15% correction coming. It's inevitable. And we're going to see a lot of turmoil in U.S. treasuries and bonds and junk bonds and so forth. This is all coming because they're driving in bubbles up and up. You know, Robin Hood, which is owned by the big hedge fund Citadel, jumped in, you know, and got stopped the retail day traders, you know, from driving up this the price of GameStop and AMC and others. In other words, speculating on behalf of Citadel, right? Because they lose money when the opposite happens. On behalf of the hedge funds. You know, Robin Hood's owned by the hedge funds. Come on. Oh, and then they backed off of it, right? It sort of slowed down the, you know, the whole bubble in GameStop and others. Slowed it down. And by the way, GameStop is a zombie company, you know? The product is no demand for it. Same with AMC, the movie chain. It's a zombie. It's so overloaded with junk bond debt that it's choking. Those are favorite targets, by the way. But anyway, Robinhood lift the restrictions on the amount and a bet you could make on GameStop here. They've been limiting, and the bubble's going back up. Yeah. See, you don't stop these bubbles until you get a crash. And some people say the bubble crash is coming. Watch out. Be it in stock, or be it in foreign exchange currencies, the dollar, whatever, be it in junk bonds, right? Be it in CLOs, junk loans, you know, be it in derivatives of some kind, we never know. Probably some hedge funds, again, will be at the center of that. Just as they were at the center of the 2008-09 crash, you see. It was the hedge funds and other investment banks and other shadow banks, as we call them, that crashed and dragged down the rest of the banking system, because the rest of the system loans them the money to speculate with, you see, and that drags down the rest of the real economy. Well, we'll see whether that happens, but the bubbles are going up as the jobs are going down and fiscal stimulus is going nowhere.
Tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Dr. Peter Bregan, the psychiatrist who doesn't believe in psychiatric drugs and psychiatric diagnoses. I think they do more harm than